I'm Darius Larson. For at least the next 2 days, the village philosopher. I've been up here most of the month, and I'm leaving on Saturday. There's been many things we've been discussing here while I've been here, and last Tuesday, was it, those of you who were around? We started a discussion on a matter of style, talking about what is it about Holden that makes Holden different than, quote, the real world, unquote, or back home? And what is it about Holden that we would like to take with us back home? And what is it about back home that we want to keep? And we got into such a discussion that those people wanted to continue it today. And so I said, I just happened to have this session, and why don't we continue it today? As village philosopher, the major tasks of my presentations are to minimize my formal input and kind of maximize group interaction. However, I do want to set the stage by reviewing what happened last week from my perspective, and then just coloring it a little bit, and hopefully that can set the stage. And those of you who are with us 2 days ago, you can add your points. I've been playing around with the meaning of the word style for probably 5 years now, and it's a beautiful word that has been misused all the time. It does not mean wearing the right monogram shirt or the right Holden sweatshirt or something like that. It doesn't mean to fit in. Style means to be set apart, to be unique. Flannery O'Connor says, you should know the truth, and the truth shall make you odd. What is odd about us? What is odd about the Christian church? What is odd about the Christian experience? What is odd about Holden Village that sets it apart? That's what I talk about. When we talk about style, it's not how can we be one with the masses. The Polish poet Miliusz says that the task of a poet is to name visions of reality that would otherwise be lost. And I think the task of Holden Village might be to name visions of reality. The task of a theologian, the task of a Christian, should be to name visions of reality that would otherwise be lost. What our discussion will revolve around, at least start revolving around today, is what is that vision of reality that without people like us may be lost, and therefore how can we keep it alive, not only for other people but for ourselves? And it's usually that's the hardest problem. 2 years ago, I was just reviewing some notes on prayer. In fact, that's what I was going to do here today. I did a couple sessions on a diet of prayer, and I looked up the word diet back then, and I think it fits into this discussion. First of all, maybe I should ask you, how many of you have ever been on a diet? Okay. What do you do when you're on a diet? What else do you do? There's some intentionality there, isn't there, that normally you don't really think about about food and all that sort of stuff. The Greek word is literally diet means manner of living or mode of life. What is the manner of living that you want to be about is the diet that you kind of shape for yourself. I am flabby, or I am overweight, or I don't have enough, I haven't been exercising enough. Therefore, I want to change my manner of living to be intentional about it. And back to the word style, all too often we let style happen to us. And if there's anything that I want to leave the village with is to have people be intentional about the lifestyle they want to live. All too often, we just kind of afterthought realize that, you know, I've gained 12 pounds or 8 pounds, or I'm watching too much TV, or I'm consuming too much, or, you know, whatever you want to, you know, I'm not interested enough in foreign affairs or whatever it is. What is the signature in life that you, as individual people, and we as a cooperative people of God, want to write across life? What is that that makes us unique? And my point is to be intentional about that. Also, the other thing about diet is a diet is about identity too. It's about transformation. It's about change. I'm like this and I want to be like this. What is that? What are you like and what do you want to become? To know that helps one in one's diet, you know, setting goals, you know, little goals in between, major goals, and getting on maintenance and all those other words that people throw around when people are on diets. Three other things. Just back in about 1976, I was driving through California, not necessarily it needs to be California, but it happens in those places, I guess. I hardly ever pick up hitchhikers, but this one I had to pick up, because this one had a sign where people say LA, San Francisco, Albuquerque, or whatever. This guy had a sign saying, home. So I said, I got to hear this guy's story. So I pulled over and picked him up. He said his name was Mad John. And he had legally changed his name years ago to Mad John. But he didn't know where home was, but he was looking for it. And he was intentional about finding home. And he says, I've been hitchhiking around the country now for about 3 years, and I think I'm getting close. I think I really am. It's just feeling right. It's feeling better for me. Then we drove for about 100 miles, and he says, you can let me off here now. So I let him off, and he started hitchhiking, going another direction. You know, I had no idea where he was going. You know, I don't know how that gets into style and diet and intentionality, but there is a certain element of intentionality there in a bizarre way, I guess. Summary of Tuesday, the way I summarized it when people said, well, what happened? I said that people here who explain what they liked about Holden, and this is probably an oversimplification, but I think it fits, view Holden as a gracious place. And they view their home as our home back wherever, as a place of suspect. And somehow, how can we bring a style of graciousness, or be more intentional about a style of graciousness back home? People talked about you don't have to have locks here. You can walk up to a stranger and see them as a potential friend rather than a potential enemy. Usually, back in our cities, we are suspect of who that is and why they're coming up to us to say, hi, how are you? What's your name? What do you do? Where are you from? You know, what do you want from me? Here it's not that way, and that was one of the things we talked about. The other thing I want to do, mainly because I did the extreme no-no with permission. This book's in the library, but I think somebody has it out. It's in the bookstore, and I asked them if I could take it because I was going to push this book, and they reluctantly said yes. So somebody please at least buy one. This book has probably been one of the most influential books for me. It's Against Principalities and Powers, Letters from a Brazilian Jail. It's like kind of Bonhoeffer's Letters and Papers from prison. Carlos Cristo is the person's name. He wrote these when he was thrown in a jail without ever having a reason. No one ever told him why he was in jail. And after 2.5 years, I think it was, they finally pressed charges or stated what he was in there for. And then he was released about half a year later with insufficient evidence. But he spent about 3 years, and these are letters to people trying to keep the faith in the midst of these adverse situations. And he was studying for the Benedictine priesthood, since he has not entered it, but he is still a religious giant in my eyes. And I want to read about two paragraphs of this, and then we'll throw it open for discussion. What counts, in other words, is not appearance, but content. What really must be profoundly changed is not our dress or our lodging, but our outlook and attitude as people of faith towards the world and history. It is not that our lifestyle has caused us to lose apostolic effectiveness, but rather that our actions and our lives no longer convey the power of Christ's gospel message. All the renewal, theological or otherwise, will profit us nothing if it does not move us to act. Here lies the key to all the renewal that must take place. Moving into action implies metanoia, repentance. That is, breaking with the past, undergoing conversion, and adhering to a new vision. Awareness and courage are indispensable. And this is the thing I've quoted around here without not remembering the guy's name. Many have the awareness. They talk incessantly about justice, poverty, human liberation. What they lack is courage to create the conditions that would make renewal possible. They do not have the courage to recognize and admit that the true church of the gospel cannot exist within the present day social structures, that such a church must come into conflict with these structures. They do not have the courage to acknowledge the harsh reality that we live in a materialistic society whose conditions do not permit people to find fulfillment in God. And then it goes on and on and on. And then the last line, this is just a letter to a friend, pray for us. Pray for all who are prisoners, inside and outside prison wall. So you've been to Holden, big deal. What is it about what I've just laid out here or anything else that you've been dealing with and struggling with either personally or collectively in sessions and things that you want to say, not big deal like big deal, but it is a big deal and I want to do something intentionally when I return, and what might that be? So part of your diet might include being more aware of, I remember I lived in Minneapolis, ran a drop-in center right by Nicollet and Lake Street. Those of you know Minneapolis, so there's the interstate right there, you know, and everything else is right there. And Cindy and I started our marriage there. Not conducive to a good marriage, I don't think. Just, we had people knocking on our door 2 a.m. and stuff, and people thinking it's a crash pad and all that. But anyway, we finally moved out of there, and one day I was sitting on a porch in another part of Minneapolis, and I heard a bird chirping. And I realized it had been 2 years since I had heard birds. You start not listening to the noises around you because it's sirens and dust and horns and cars and all these other sorts of things. So you become numb to that. There's a certain deafness there in order to survive, I think. And coming up here makes you want to listen to more of those things. I can identify with that.
What I've found over the years is how important it is to have good memories. When things get really tough at home, which they sometimes do, you can sort of meditate about some of the things up here, and it's a tremendous help just to know that this place is here and that it exists. Has meant a great deal to me.
Who was it in their devotional the day before they left that read that C.S. Lewis story about lovemaking or something, but the point was that the experience isn't being here, but the experience is an ongoing experience that you continually to reflect on and digest, and years and years and years and after. And you said you were here how many years ago? 4 years ago, and you're still having that experience. And so it's not this thing that now that you go down the mountain and enter the valley, you can just... then you don't have to take hold of it with you. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I've talked to 2 or 3 people after the Tuesday session, and everyone said the same thing. That was a good springboard. Let's go from there. And the people that were there on Tuesday, I'm trying to think where we were headed, where he was leading us, or where we were leading ourselves, or something. But it seemed like the time was up, and we had just sort of gotten to the point where, you know, in the group that we were just leading off from there. I think one of the things you said that we wanted to talk about more was Holden has all of these things, some of which we want to take with us to our homes. What are the things that presently exist in our homes that we want to nurture and kindle based on the good things that we said about Holden? Was that
yeah. In fact, I was just, in fact, I told several people this. I mean, treating all of us anonymously, including myself, but speaking about it, I guess it wasn't anonymous because they knew I was there. I asked the question, what is it that you want to keep about your lifestyle back home? And there was at least, I think, a minute and a half of silence. We could not think of, we were just talking about all these things about what we want to bring back from home and back home, you know. And then finally somebody said, well, our friends. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of where we almost left it. Yeah. What is it about back home, and we kind of facetiously call it the real world, that one enjoys, that one likes, that says, by George, my diet's still going to include those mashed potatoes. I like them. Yeah.
One thing that I actually miss when I'm here, there are a few things I even miss, and it's not only my car and my phone, but is the sense that one of the things that's very good about here is, of course, that everybody values what each other does while they're here, even if it's something sort of stupid like cleaning toilets or whatever. But what I miss very much, and that I'm anxious to go back to and want to keep, is my sense of purpose, the thing that I like to do and that I do in my routine, my work. And that's something real important.
For those of us who are in between something, you know, like, what's my purpose?
Not necessarily what I do gives me a purpose from now until forever, but the sense that what I do during the day, I have things I need to accomplish, and that people are counting on me to do them.
And the point there is that if that's essential for you and essential for other people, that possibly that's one key for people who might be wondering about what is life like really back, down the mountain like that, is to find a job, an occupation, or at least some sort of time that you work that is fulfilling.
If I can go on for a second, I think one of the things that is good about being here and going back is one of the things that's good here is meeting people who do lots of different things and recognizing how important it is that whatever it is that they do well and that it's important to yourself. Mm-hmm. And that gives you a lot more confidence about the importance of my contribution to the community, however irrelevant I think it is from time to time. I recognize that, you know, it's sort of one of our many members' theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I find out in my experience in Poland is how much my life in the real world has become task-oriented. And I find myself constantly making decisions to get expensive, excluding, you know, some things in my life. And gradually it's becoming like a family vision. And I think coming to Poland has permitted me to see things that are outside of my world. And maybe be a little bit more involved in politics of other countries. And or maybe go to different kind of music concerts and just experience different things. And just in general way, just broaden the horizon of my life, so to speak.
Yeah.
This is a little reminiscent.
Just a little of it.
Little reminiscent of the years ago when my kids went to a week of Bible camp and they come back and all their Christians, they had the most special friends. They were sure, I know, that they're going to be Christians the rest of their lives and live. They're up here, you know. And I think we in the church, or we who structured that, missed the important thing of helping them to carry, to make that pertinent into their daily lives, because a month later, they're back at school and they were wondering, yeah, they had this kind of fond memory, but it was a memory, It was not real in their life with their friends and with their homework and all that. I think anytime you have a mountaintop experience, where do you call it? There's got to be a way, if it's worthwhile, of bringing it home and living it for the next year.
Over here and then over here.
Well, last year I went to a retreat at Luka David Corn Lake. It was the Disciples in Society, Laos Movement, and I had a marvelous experience there. And when I came home, I called my daughter who lives in North Carolina and told her about it. And I said it was a terrific mountaintop experience, but now I'll have to live down in the plains. And she said, well, Mother, you'll be growing fruit in the plains.
Good. Good, yeah.
Synthesis for me. This week has been one. I hear a lot about going back home and what do we value at home. For me, it's work, definitely. I've tended to compartmentalize. I have my Lutheran Norwegian stuff back in Minnesota. I go back there a couple of times a year. And then I come home and I miss that. But when I go back to Minnesota, I miss my work. I miss California. I miss the outdoors. Somehow this week it has all come together. I've seen that Lutherans don't have to just exist in Minneapolis.
Some of us live even as far away as Albuquerque.
And it's a coming together of the things I value in both those places.
And it's so great to hear a friend Californian, because some of you know we're also Californians, transplants from the Midwest a thousand years ago. But anyway, I do want to share, you're talking about things at home to value. And something that I want to really be careful and not to lose back home, that would be so easy to do for me, and that is, after leaving this very special place, where I am really secure, almost speaking up to almost anyone, if I've never seen their face before, because I am pretty sure they are with the Lord, or whatever you want to call it, the Spirit has touched them, they're here. We might find even great some people back in Minnesota that we knew and all this. So I really feel safe almost speaking up to anyone here. Not always, and I've come here a number of times, so I know if you're scared at home at some time, I've been there. I know how you're feeling. But basically, I felt pretty comfortable here speaking up, opening my mouth, and Ted, I talked to him for the first time in the laundry, isn't that great? But when I get home, I hope I don't lose a value of not surrounding myself always with the support system that I have here, there. I know where they are. They're there. I can find them. I want to dump myself into what our Bible studies have always been saying, the whole world. And risk opening my mouth or signing with those that I might turn me off and might reject me. And that's what I want to keep back there. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have to ask for a lot of strength to do that. And a lot of return trips to Holden to do that. And a lot of support system back there, not to bury myself in, but to throw myself into those other places.
I think that point, the secondary point there is a support group, I think, is to keep any vision alive. It can't be a solo vision. And whatever it is that you want to be about, you got to find other people who are about that same vision, at least. Otherwise, I start thinking I'm crazy, and I start just thinking that it's only me who thinks about it, and therefore I don't do anything about it. When I find other people who actually believe and think that same way, then the action, as Carlos Cristo says, then I might actually act upon that which I believe, rather than just believe it in my own closet.
And just one quick thing to know, so it doesn't get too heavy, and Holden has a marvelous sense of humor. I was walking up the thing with my four-year-old grandson, Joshua, and he looked at me yesterday and said, "Grandma, how come there are no robbers here?" And I said, "Honey," I didn't know what to say, and I'm not really sure what I said. Then he said, "But how come they weren't born here?" Well, I'm not sure my response was very profound, but Norm said to me when I told him, he said, "Oh, they are, but their names are chipmunks, and we don't mind."
Business about the sense of humor, I think that's the hardest part about going back. It's so serious. Everyone is taking everything so serious. You can't laugh at a mistake, you can't laugh at anything.
Yeah. One of the things I particularly appreciate in the village is we can bring our kids up here and they realize that there are other people whom they can respect who live a lifestyle that we talk about at home, but they think it's just mom and dad being weird again.
I find that there's a cycle. When I go to retreats like this, I get replenished spiritually, mentally. And then I go on innervated and I plunge into work. And I know that I'm going to need replenishment again, and so I have to go back. Because that's the kind of people who get together in the kind of way that I need, who sustain me and support me for that time, give me the energy to go on again.
Kind of a thought related to that is it sure is a pleasure to have this kind of time. I'm here for my first time for just 1 week, and yet it is like plunging into a pool. It's nice to have that kind of time. But I guess where I see a real importance to try to practice is to have these moments all through our year, and not to save up all our junk or all our emptiness for a grand retreat. The days in between are too precious to do that too. There are a lot more distractions at home than there are here, although I've been surprised at the difficulty of making choices here, but I figure that's just good practice for going back home to make sure that there is a balance and that those things that you believe are important are given attention as regularly as possible. I always used to take vacations in big chunks. I thought that was the way to do it, and I have really switched out of that into shorter times and more frequent times.
Just like everyone has pictures on the wall, they're the same pictures, but if you rearrange them, they begin to look different to you. I think that may be going into a different situation like we've gone to here, we come back and see our life pictures just with a little different filter on them. I think each of us have people in our lives, either dead or living, who we could call a meditative council, maybe 20 or more relatives or theologians or whatever. And sometimes those words that are dropped, like we hear, can rearrange our list of people who we listen to. And in turn, we could possibly affect others in changing their counsel around a little bit. One of the best people on my list is Buckminster Fuller, died about a couple years ago, but he crossed out three things in his dictionary: failure, mistakes, and error. He said they don't exist anymore. And I think that's good to remember for risk takers. And he said he wrote in as a substitute, unexpected results.
The other thing Buckminster Fuller said is that the problem with this world is where are the specialists. They know more and more about less and less. You know, that what we need, what the vision we need is somebody who can see, be generalist, know less and less about more and more, you know, in that sense. The other thing that came to mind when you were speaking is, I call those inner companions. What is it, and how can Hoden be, in that sense, an inner companion? So that they're so much a part of myself that I quote them without giving them credit. You know, there's key people or events in my life which are so much of a part of me that I no longer refer to them as Dan Erlander said. You know, I just plagiarize them because I have digested it back to the diet stuff. It has become one with me, and it's in my veins and all over the place. You know, and what is it that we want, or is it this junk food that we just, you know, inhale in and it all comes out very quickly and leaves nothing beneficial for us? Hopefully it doesn't pass through our system that quickly, I would think. Yeah, way in the back.
Being here this 1 week has made me realize all the more that I have been blessed to be a blessing. That given me reinforcement, I am eager to go back and get back to work. And it also made me feel how fortunate I am. I talked to a lady who lives with bars on her windows and bars on her doors and locks, and I can go back home to a very quiet, dear place where I live with wonderful neighbors all around me.
Mm-hmm. I want to push it a little harder about, you just said they're wonderful neighbors all around you. Okay, that's one thing. What is it about home? What is it about the American society that we're proud of, that we say we want to affirm and we want to be intentional about keeping that a part of who and what we're all about? You know, what are those things? We keep getting back to saying about Holden, and then do we really need a total metamorphosis? Do we need a total metanoia, a total transformation? I mean, are we Dr. Jekylls and Mr. Hydes, or what? You know, I have to believe there's lots of things about who and what we're all about back there that we want to say hip hip hooray about.
One thing I cannot believe, my husband will quote me someday when I'm tearing my hair out. My kids are driving me crazy. But I have not seen my kids. We live in a real remote area where they are home a lot, and our family is together a lot. And one of the big reasons for coming to Holden is so they can be with their father, because he's been working hard, he's been home a lot. We have not seen them. We do not see them at meal time. They are busy. I have no idea where they are. Mm-hmm. I really kind of miss seeing my kids, and that was one of the big reasons for coming to Holden. Mm-hmm. And yet I was just complaining to Norm because there's no teen program, and our 13-year-old is cruising around here. You know, we're going to have to contrive some family activities while we're here. The last time we were here, 4 years ago, we were all together a lot, except for the morning Narnia activities. But I'm really kind of missing
my family. Yeah, almost have to plan a hike or something.
I guess we're going to plan a hike.
Be under the tree at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But what better place can you have to let loose of them?
Yeah, right.
I lived in Chicago and Milwaukee, and believe me, you have to keep a sharp eye out all the time.
No, I could let him go at home too, just that.
That's not
a problem where we live. But.
If I can push it one more time, though, I'm going to push it and push it maybe three more times. What is it about home that's worth affirming? What is it about the style one lives back home that we would like to say amen to? Underline it. It is good.
Family together.
An awful lot of things. I think those of us who choose to come up here come from rather special backgrounds to start with. I feel so good about up here, but I don't feel, it just affirms what I have at home. I can't say that I've only been here 5 days. I'm not good with the speed. But it affirms what I value at home. But I value that more because there I'm closer to family relationships. I feel a little too remote here. Mm-hmm. I'm a little cut off. We're in kind of family crisis right now, and I miss the telephone. I can't call. But I feel real good about home, mm-hmm. looking at it through the eyes of Holden.
One thing is the church, although certainly with our 90-member church and our pump organ, we can't come close to what happens next door. And it's great to come up here and have that great celebration and worship. But everybody comes and everybody goes, and it's kind of a fluctuating community, and where it's very exciting. At home, I see the same people every Sunday, and we work together, and we know each other in depth, and we know what each of us needs and what each of our problems are, and that's something you don't get here, and I can certainly affirm that.
Okay, good point, and what triggered in my mind, this is a better way of asking anything, Herbert Coles in a book called Half the House, has nothing to do with what I'm going to say, but the illustration fits. He's an educational something or another. He says that all of us are like a house. And half of our house is in pretty good shape and half of our house is really messed up. The problem is that we either are complacent and just look at the half that's pretty nice and say, that's pretty nice. Or what most of us get into is look at the part that's messy and say, oh my God, what am I gonna do? My life is just falling apart around me and everything else. And his point is that unless we can affirm the half that is pretty good and pretty solid, we don't have any energy to take a look at the attic or the basement or the junk room or whatever else it is and sort through some of that stuff. And so what we do is we see all these beautiful things up here, you know, and then we go back home and we're back into the mess and we haven't affirmed anything back there and all of our energy is just zapped from us. And we need another retreat quick rather than 6 months down the road, you know. Or we get very depressed rather than saying, oh, I'm excited. I can't wait to get whoever. Oh, I can't wait. Come down. You can't wait to get home. I mean, this is a time for me to do some resolution building and to try to be intentional about where I've been and where I want to go with who and what I'm all about. And you don't know how it's going to work until you get back there. So I'm actually kind of excited to get back there and get working on that. But only because I know there's some things that are pretty well defined already. There's a lot of muck out there too. But what is, you know, so the question then is, and the church said, what are some of that stuff that's pretty good, and then we'll worry about the muck.
Because there's so much, you know, there's so many. When I go to Ralph's, I hear 7 languages. You know, that's my market. And, while it's not necessarily a melting pot, and I don't think a melting pot is any longer an American ideal, I think now there's more an ideal of appreciating a number of cultures, and I think it is an ideal more than a real practice, really. But people to have so many neighborhoods and so many different cultures that people really, truly just kind of tolerate, and sometimes even a little better than tolerate, but actually enjoy and try to understand and see them. And I feel also sort of somewhat unchallenged or a little bit too, everything's so, plain.
Herman Hesse has a book. It has another title, but its original title was The Glass Bead Game. And in it is a story about this master of the glass bead game, and it's kind of a monastic order type of thing, let's say up in the mountaintop. And this person, he spends all this creative energy and juices and things learning this game, and all these other people are learning it, some of the great talent of the world. And meanwhile, World War II is starting to erupt all around and stuff, or a big war at least. and the glass bead mast, and you're not allowed out of the walls and things, otherwise you lose your title. And his big dilemma was, when do I leave in order to apply that which I know for the greater good? You know, and it's a struggle. I go to Minnesota, I'm from Albuquerque, I go to Minneapolis in the wintertime, and I walk around and say, boy, people look boring. Then I realize they all look like me. You know, and I'm not consciously aware of that. Holden is pretty much like that. You know, let alone me. There might be a few people who speak Norwegian, but other than that, it's primarily English. Yes, Ms. Norwegian.
Well, I was just going to ignore
that. Oh, Chad.
I can't stop that from you. Last summer, we spent a month in New York, and we kind of had a Holden in New York. We went visiting to different churches, and one church I decided, everyone was talking to someone. I decided, I'll talk to this woman. She doesn't have anyone to talk to. And it turned out she was a Presbyterian visiting from another church because her pastor wasn't home. She was a professor from Columbia, and she took us out for dinner. And it was just because I introduced myself. You always introduce yourself to someone. And if they don't have anyone to talk to, that's the person you should talk to. Mm-hmm. Don't look for the people who have plenty of people. And you'll always find someone interesting. And everything about New York was kind of beholden. I never thought I'd like New York, and we just kind of wonder.
Bonnie takes her wonderful time with her wherever she goes, too.
Not necessarily. I don't know.
Not every place but the loom room.
That's where I met her. And she creates it down there, too. She creates her own world of caring and reaching out. I mean, I just thought in a short time, she's trying to teach me how to do the loom.
Yeah.
And she'd take that loom, and she would take it to New York City or the loom room or wherever. And there are people that do that.
Can you imagine what the beauty of Holden, if everybody who's ever wandered through here, and I think this is one goal of Holden, I would think, at least maybe it's not spelled out, is to have mini Holdens all over the place. I mean, if you could walk up and have conversations like that, you know, two people, I mean, that would, and it does happen, you know. And the problem with Holden is it is so much easier up here. So much easier. I mean, there are, as far as we know, the only robbers around are chipmunks, and I think people who like their cookies. Somebody stole a cookie 2 weeks ago from me. I went to get milk and came back, and my cookie was gone. There was not a chipmunk who carried it away either.
One of the symbols about Holden is it's bread baking, and you know, we all know the story about seven loaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 5,000 were fed, or some such thing, and we're seven baskets left.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we carry that symbol with us, I can see that.
It may be even more appropriate tonight because I talked to the cooks and said if the water isn't turned on, the only thing we have is bread. So that may be our supper tonight, but hopefully they have it work. I'm still looking for sprinklers starting to go and I haven't seen any. Yeah.
If you're listening to something profound, and every time I do this, it comes off, you know, not too great. Talking as an educator, I think one of the reasons, and I don't think we quite get a hold of any certain thing that anybody's going to take back. We're kind of struggling with it. And one thing I learned a long time ago is that I'm right here on the continuum, okay? So when I get with a group, you know, maybe so the group is over here and somewhere over here, and I'm talking about where I'm at, and I sure like that people be where I'm at, because then they know what I'm talking about. That's one thing. The other thing is that we assimilate only depending on where we're at. You know, I'm in a certain place right now in my growing. I came here because I'm struggling with some things. What I I'm going to have to sort out what I get here and take back what is workable for me and for my situation. And I think everybody who comes here is for whatever reason, we're going to take back what fits in with who they are and with where they're going. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, how can I tell you what you're going to take back? I can tell you what I'm taking back. But,
the only thing I would like to tell you is what I've told you and I'll continue to tell you is to be intentional about that. You know, just don't let it happen. And all too often we just let it happen and then we don't take back as much as we could, or we don't even know what it is that we're taking back. And the time to do that may not be while you're here. The time while you're here is to experience here, maybe. And then be intentional about it. That's when the nitty gritty, you know, really, really comes. But yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. There's a Time essay years ago said that Americans take time to do everything except for one thing. Reflect on that, what they're doing. You know, and I really think it's true. I schedule everything in my life except for to take a look at what's necessary here. You know, what am I really want to be about? And that's what intentional styling's all about. You know, is to say, is that really what I want to be about?
Tell us how to do it.
Schedule previous commitments.
Schedule what? Say more.
Tell us how to do it.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, did you want to, or how do you do it?
I just learned it in this past year.
well, one way at any rate, a friend of mine found that time was being taken from his day and decided that the only language that people would understand when they would ask him to do yet another thing is to say, I'm sorry, I have a previous commitment. And the previous commitment was to himself.
Mm-hmm. See, we
never gotten by.
We always think we have to be something for someone else. And we get so drained we're no good to somebody else, let alone to ourselves. And what I do, and it took a while to learn this, and I'm still learning it. Just, you know, I can tell you all these wonderful things and talk to my wife and she'll tell you the true me. You know, so with that preface, let me risk telling you how I have it all together. Yeah. I don't only just say a previous, I literally schedule in my book. I schedule self time, I schedule study time, and I schedule family time. It sounds crass, but the only way I can spend time with my wife and my children, the amount of time that they would like me to spend and I would like to spend, is to schedule it in. It is an appointment. And it's not an appointment which is flexible, but it is an appointment that I will keep, except for extreme emergencies. But all these people who come into my office say, oh, I've had a terrible day. Do you have some time to talk? I says, yes, I do. You know, can it be something rather than right now? Because if I say right now, then they just keep coming and coming and coming. And then I used to think, well, Cindy will understand. Cindy doesn't understand. I don't understand, you know. And so for me to be fed, I got to keep priorities straight. And priorities are to keep myself feeling on top of who and what I'm all about, and also my family. You know, when I say self, that means me and God and all that relationship too. Martin Luther said, then I'll shut up. Martin Luther said, is a loose paraphrase, that, boy, I got a busy day. I got to at least spend 2 hours in prayer. Mm-hmm. How many of us, you know, don't do the reflection time on a busy day? I walk to work on days about half the time. And when I walk, my life goes so much nicer. When I'm a little bit hurried, so I don't have time to walk, you know, I get in the car and drive there, and I'm never on top of things. Mm-hmm. But a few other things, but here and then, yeah, here.
That's something we've really struggled with, is our priorities. And we've found that our life can just run away with us, and our day gets so busy, and we have to continually, in a car, do you even find time to do this, and sit down with each other, and we have to write it down, mm-hmm. and make a list of, what are our overall priorities in life and how are we spending our time? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times we find out that, like, our top three priorities we're not even doing, you know, of our life, that the way we spend our day isn't like that. And we just have to continually reevaluate what are our priorities and how can we put that into our day. And it's hard without, for us anyway, without really sitting down and writing it. And even posting it so that we remember.
That sounds like that's not what love and romance and marriage is supposed to be all about. But it is. Otherwise, there's not no love and romance. Yeah.
It's what I don't know or don't know how to do well is to self-reflect.
Is what?
Self-reflect and evaluate. Is it a matter of setting priorities or is it something else? How do you self-reflect? Mm.
I discovered I have to schedule that. I have a spiritual director that I see once a month. I spend overnight because she said, you're worthless when you come. You have And then she directs my spiritual meditation. And she listens to everything that's happened since I was there the last time. And from that, can figure out probably what I need for the for that 2 days that I had with her. And I come home so refreshed and so full of energy to, because she's helped me discover what was missing. But you,
is there a process that you approve?
Couple.
A lot of prayer and meditation and walking. She always sends me out on a walk before I do anything.
Couple really quick processes that one can do is whatever the problem is, whatever you want to think about, you know, like is my job, whatever, or let's take a little easier one. Do I really want to spend more time with Jane? You know, okay. So the question is with Jane, and you do this grid thing. What are the advantages of spending more time with Jane, and what are the disadvantages? You know, we say we can't, especially with people, we can't do that with people. I think we can, because otherwise we spend too much time with people that drain us rather than feed us, and you need a balance. You do need a balance with them. And with your job, and with tennis playing, with watching TV, or anything else, what are the pluses? I watch 40 hours of TV a week. What's the benefits? What's the disadvantages? You start doing that, and you're going to cut back on your TV. I would, you know. The other thing is, and there's tons of different books out on this, is journaling or dialogue. I dialoguing, and state the problem, and then just whoever you think is a person who you like to go to for advice, even if the person's dead. You know, it's part of my inner companion things. That person is the other person is dialogue. I do this with my dad a lot. He died 4 years ago, and I go, Dad, you know, I'm wondering if I should do this, that, or whatever. You know, should I spend more time with Jane? Well, what do you mean, Jane? You know, tell me about it. Yeah. And I just, it's just this flowing dialogue thing. Or if you don't like to write, you can do it in a tape. And then you reread it or listen to it in the tape, and you're amazed at the insight that comes out. And if you really want to get risky, this is how you can pray. Darius says this, God says this, Darius says this, God. And I'm not a believer in mystery writing type of stuff, but I'm amazed at the insights. That if I'm putting all my knowledge of who and what God is in this thing and just letting it flow, pretty soon I'm not saying, now what do I think God will say? I am God, and I'm writing what God says. And, you know. So that's just some very min. There's tons of different things, but those are a couple things that I've thought
of. It takes time.
And that's the important, to schedule that time in. Schedule that time in. We got about 3 more minutes.
Two things come to mind. Like you were just saying, I'd like to underscore by someone who said that style and art and life are kind of all interconnected. And a good definition for all those three things is to experience your experiences. So it's not that you have to go searching after some unknown thing. It's experiencing what you already have inside. The other thought is that, was it Marcel Breuer or some architect that said, he was wondering, somebody said, what about your buildings? Tell us about your buildings. Why do you spend so much time in the details? He said, God is in the details. And so as we, go home and wash dishes or diapers or whatever, think about God being in those details.
Make a big difference. Yeah. 4 quick things, and then you can wrap it up for us. One is, yes, to acknowledge that the Holy Spirit is within us. That's another way of saying it. We always think that we got to look for it somewhere. It is here, and what I am is good. And affirm that in oneself. The other thing is to free up We think to schedule means to think of, my God, how busy I am. But it's people who don't schedule, I think, that aren't freed up. Third thing, very closely related to it, Luther wrote this beautiful theological treatise on the bondage of the will. And it's very difficult reading, so don't read it. But what the one point that I think is worth repeating and repeating and repeating is that there's no such thing as free will. The only thing is that we're free to choose our bondage. What is it that we want to be bound to? That we are free to choose.
Good.
And so let us choose it. Let us be intentional about it. That's the matter of style that it's all about. So how do you want to be bound? Which gets into that book, The Celebration of Discipline. Is that the one that you have there? The root word for discipline and disciple are the same root. If you want to be a disciple, you must be disciplined. And once again, underline, that means to be intentional about that which you want to be about in life.
Well, now this doesn't seem inconsequential. But I was thinking, several years ago, I was not very well and discovered that I had a thyroid condition. And my brother came to me one day and he said, how are you feeling, Mom? And I said, I feel fine as long as I have time with the Lord first in the morning and my thyroid fell. And he said, well, couldn't you get along without the thyroid? And I said, no, I can't get along without that either. But it is this time alone with the Lord, knowing that he's in every little part of the day, that he is in the detail of the day, that time spent with him where he speaks to me through his word and I speak to him through his word, and then move on into excitement, because he has lots of surprises along the way.
Yeah. Once again, those of you who weren't around, if you have not gotten or been on the subscription list for the Resource Center here at Holden, it's precisely to deal with what we've been talking about. How to have a bit of Holden on a year-round basis four times a year. And they have packets from 82, 83, and 83, 84 that you can buy. They recommend anything you want to give them, but at least, I would say at least $4 a packet. That you can get either from Dan or Lane in the Resource Center Open House or in the bookstore and then subscribe to it on an ongoing basis. And there's one other thing which I now forgot. So let's go in peace and continue the conversation. And the bell rang, it must mean the water came back on. Thank you, Jesus.